Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us this morning. On the program today, we have one topic for both hours of the show, and we will be coming at it from two definitely different perspectives. This week, as you probably know, President Bush unveiled his first budget, and as part of that, his proposal for a rather substantial tax cut, $1.6 trillion over 10 years, something that really shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone during the campaign. Mr. Bush said that if he were elected, he would certainly ask for a tax cut, would also propose some other things, including an end of the estate tax and to what has been called the marriage penalty. And this has been a contentious issue now going back some time with some people arguing that the problem with this kind of tax cut is that it benefits mostly the wealthy. And on the other side, there are people, they tend to be Republicans, who say that the kind of cuts that Mr. Bush has now proposed aren't enough, that they should be bigger. Many Republicans do indeed support the idea of getting rid of the estate tax. So we're going to try to talk about it this morning with two guests who definitely, as I said, have two different perspectives. In the second hour, you'll be hearing from Dan Mitchell. He's an economist at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. He'll be joining us by telephone. Here in the studio with us for the first hour of the program is Mark Weisbrot. He is an economist. He has a Ph.D. in economics from University of Michigan. His special area of interest, international economics and political economy. He's currently co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He writes a weekly column on economic and policy issues that is distributed to over 400 newspapers by Knight Ridder Tribune Media Services. He's also author of a couple of books. The most recent titled Social Security, The Phony Crisis, that came out in 2000, last year. He's also the author of a book titled One Year After Seattle, Globalization Revisited. So if you're interested in reading some of his writing on these subjects, you can go out and seek out his books. And as always, here on the show, questions, comments are welcome. All we ask of callers is people just try to be brief, just so we can keep things moving along. But anyone's welcome to call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thank you for being here once again. I don't know where you want to start. You want to give a general critique of the tax proposal that the president has made?
Well, sure. You have, first of all, about 43% of the benefits would go to the top 1% of taxpayers, the richest 1% of taxpayers, who have an average income of about $915,000 a year. So that's the first thing I think that most people see as really unfair. And this is an enormous amount of money going to a small group of people who already have a lot of money. And it's even worse than that, because if you look at the last two decades of economic history in the United States, what you find is that this group, this top 1%, actually more than doubled their real inflation-adjusted after-tax income. So this is a group that's done enormously well and taken a huge piece of the economic expansion that we've had in the last 20 years. And at the same time, and this is really unprecedented in our history, you have for the bottom half, you know, the 50th percentile on down of wage and salary earners have actually gotten nothing out of the economic growth. That is, the median wage today can buy just about what it bought 27 years ago. So everybody from the median wage on down has either stayed about the same, or those jobs, that is, the pay has stayed about the same, or it has actually fallen over the last couple of decades. So to come at this time and rewrite the tax code so as to shift even more of the burden of taxation from the wealthiest taxpayers to people who haven't gotten anything, haven't shared in the gains from economic growth, is really quite an outrageous thing to do at this time.
Hmm. I suppose that some people would make the argument that it's perfectly appropriate for the wealthiest people to get the biggest share of the tax cut because they pay more in taxes than people who make less money. That is, they're paying the biggest share of the taxes, so why shouldn't they get the biggest share of the cut?
Well, there are several answers to that. I mean, first of all, they're still getting way more than even is proportional to the share that they pay. So if you look at all federal taxes, that top 1% is paying somewhere around 19% of federal taxes. And so they're getting 40%. 43% of the tax cut. So it's not even proportional there. Secondly, you know, and you'll probably have your guest on the second hour will try to say otherwise, but what people in favor of the tax cut are doing is they focus only on income taxes, whereas, and so they can say, well, the top 1% pays a larger share than that, than their 19%, because they say, you know, they're only looking at income taxes. But in fact, 4 out of 5 taxpayers are paying more in federal payroll taxes, that is Social Security and Medicare, than they are in income taxes. So if you look at all federal taxes, there's still an enormous amount paid by all taxpayers, really all the way down to the bottom, and that's where the cuts should be made. The other answer to that, I should say, is that if you look at what's happened, again, over the last 20 years, you have, it's true, an increasing share of taxes have been paid by the upper income groups, by the wealthiest groups. And that's because their share of the income, total income, has increased so rapidly. So that's what has to happen if you leave the tax code alone. And all the gains from economic growth are going to the top, you know, 10 or 20% of the income distribution as they did in the 80s, then people in that part, and of course a huge part are going to the top 1%, people with that kind of money are going to pay a larger share of the total taxes because they're getting an enormously larger share of the total income. So if you come back and say, oh, you don't like that they're paying so much of the taxes, which is what the Republicans are doing, and say we have to change that, then what you're doing is you're saying that every time income and wealth is concentrated upward, that you're going to come and rewrite the tax code to make that even worse so that they don't have to pay a larger share of the taxes. Yeah.
So you're just making the argument that says it's supposed to be a graduated system. So if people, you know, and people pay in proportion to what they make, well, if people are making a lot more, then they should be paying more.
Yes.
What do you think of I think some people are concerned. They say, well, we're talking about $1.6 trillion over 10 years. That means $1.6 trillion fewer dollars going to be coming into the federal government to pay for various kinds of federal programs. And they're concerned that at some point, if money gets tight, if the economy slows down, then somehow we're going to be in trouble because we're not going to have that money to do the things that the government is supposed to do, among them pay Social Security benefits. Is that a worry?
No, that's actually not true at all. And it's unfortunate that the Democrats have rested so much of their argument on this idea because it wasn't true. And I think that's why they lost a lot of steam when Alan Greenspan, the chair of the Fed, came out and said that, you know, the tax cut was affordable. And he was right. It isn't a question of affordability. It's a $5.6 trillion surplus. Now, both parties have, to varying degrees, but especially the Democrats, have assumed that you have to use the $2.6 trillion of Social Security revenues to pay off the national debt. But there's no reason for that. That's just a little trick that they came up with back, you know, a couple of years ago to try and defeat this tax cut. And this is why I think it's very often, I think people forget this, that it's very often just better to be honest about these things. And in this sense, the Republicans are, they're not honest about who's going to get the benefits of the tax cut or anything like that. But they go and they fight for what they want. And I think it would be much better if the Democratic leadership were willing to do the same thing. I mean, here we have, you know, this is an enormous surplus. I mean, we're in a position now that we've never been in really in the whole post-World War II period. And if you, you know, you compare this to 35 years ago when you had the President of the United States declaring a war on poverty, or, you know, what is now 37 years ago, you know, this is, we're in an enormously better position to take care of all the major problems that we have. You know, with this tax cut, we could have national health care for everyone, for example. We could really get rid of poverty, which is what President Johnson said he wanted to do in 1964, and everybody assumed that that was doable. Well, now we have 70% more income per person than we had then, and we have this enormous surplus. So, I mean, the real debate should be about what can we do for this country at a time of unprecedented national prosperity. Now, I realize the economy is slowing down now, and we don't know what the next couple of years are going to be. But this is a long-term projection, and even if it turns out to be off by $1 trillion, it still wouldn't matter. There's a lot of money there to really tackle some of our most pressing social and economic problems.
I probably should introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580, Mark Weisbrot. He is an economist. He's co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., and has visited with us from time to time to talk about economic and political issues. We're talking about the Bush tax cut proposal this week. The president proposed a $1.6 trillion cut in taxes over 10 years. And this morning on the program, we're talking about it with two different guests who have two different views. In the second part of the show, you'll have an opportunity to hear from Dan Mitchell. He's a senior fellow in political economy at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. He'll be joining us by phone. And you can do the same. Join us by phone, that is, if you have questions, comments. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, if you make the argument that says that the problem with the tax cut is that the benefits go to the people who are on the top of the income range, and you have said the same thing that a number of other people have said, including, I think, the people that are getting maybe the most attention. There have been a lot of mentions of this in news coverage of the tax cut, this organization called Citizens for Tax Justice, mm-hmm. that have looked at this, and they basically have said the same thing. Wealthiest 1% of all taxpayers, here on their website it says, and I quote, "The wealthiest 1% of all taxpayers get an average tax reduction of $54,480 a year, 45% of the total cut." Now, I'm not sure exactly how it is that they figure that out, but basically,
no, it's actually their numbers, and their model is a very good model, and that's actually what's being used by almost everyone in the debate.
Okay. So if we say that's the problem with this tax cut, and that we would like to do something that would benefit everybody else, particularly the people on the bottom, as they say, for example, the bottom 20%, and under this plan, the bottom 20% would see an average tax cut $47 a year as compared to the $54,000 of the people on top. So if we want to do something for the people on the bottom end, what would be better in your estimation? What would be better than this? What would we do?
Well, there are a lot of things that would be better. And by the way, it isn't just the bottom 20%. If you look at their numbers there, and I don't know what you have, but I think the bottom 60% would end up with a tax cut of, you know, a couple hundred dollars, $227 or something like that, an average tax cut.
Yeah, I think, so it was taxpayers in the lowest 60% of the income scale, they get 12.7%, their average annual tax reduction, $256. So, and then the bottom 20%, $47.
Yes. So even, you know, even for the majority of taxpayers, there's hardly anything there at all. And so there are a lot of things you can do. First of all, I mean, I don't think it's a good idea to rewrite the tax code, or it's necessary to do that at this time. And if, you know, if you look at what the administration is saying, they're saying we need this tax cut to stimulate the economy. And that is a valid argument, except not for this tax cut, because it's way too slow and it's way too skewed towards the top. What you could do is just have a rebate for everyone, which could be very quick. Everyone gets a check, $500 per person. That would cost about a tenth of this $1.6 trillion. And you could see if you needed it next year. Maybe we won't, maybe the economy will be growing quite rapidly next year. We have no idea. And this would be, everyone gets a share of the, you know, it would be a prosperity dividend. This would be fair. A family of four, a typical family of four, instead of getting the few hundred dollars they would get under this 5 years from now, they would get an immediate $2,000. And they'd go out and spend it. And that would be the best thing you could do for the economy right now.
Let's take a couple of callers here. Well, we have somebody on cell phone, so I hope that first caller won't mind if I go to the cell phone person first. Line number four. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
I guess my question is twofold. I hear from people that the third biggest thing in the budget is interest on the debt. I need to know if that's true. And then my question is, if the top 1% tax cut were exactly half and that were distributed among people at the poverty line below, what would the people below the poverty line get?
Okay, have you?
I got the first question. I wasn't quite sure about the second one.
We hear about how much the people in the top 1% would get, $54,000?
Yes.
Okay, if their tax cut were exactly half, and that money was distributed to the lower end, let's say people, I think people at the poverty line pay no tax or very little, so just the lower 2%, what would those people get?
Right, okay, I'm sorry, we're sort of losing the caller, but I think we got the question. His question was, okay, if we're saying that the people on the top are getting a tax reduction of $54,000 a year, supposing that we cut that in half and we said, okay, we're only going to give them $27,000, and the other $27,000, we're going to take all that money and then we're going to split it up and give it to write a check and give it to the people on the bottom. How much do those people get?
Yes. Well, I would have to do the math for that. I was thinking about the arithmetic. That's why I had a hard time with the question. It would be significant, though. It would be a lot more than what they're getting right now. I could tell you that much. Let's see. What would you have? Well, I mean, you know, you can look at it this way. Right now, that $27,000 per rich household comes out to be about 20% of the $1.6 trillion tax cut. So that would be about $320 billion that you would have to distribute again, among whatever group of people you're talking about. So it's quite a bit of money. You know, it would depend on the size of the group you're distributing to, but it would be, you know, several times more than what they're getting right now. And many of them, of course, are getting nothing at all. I'd have to do the math to give you an exact answer and get an exact number for the people you're talking about, but just imagine that $320 billion, for example, distributed amongst, I don't know, 10 million people, or, well, that would be, you know, it would be that would be people on the bottom. I mean, that's an enormous amount of money, you know, so it is quite a bit. What was the first question?
Let me check back and see. We lost the caller, and I have to apologize. I'm afraid that I lost the first question.
Okay.
Myself. Our apologies to the caller. If you would like to call back, we'll make sure that we get his question. Let's go to another caller here. This is Champaign County, line number one.
I don't remember it either. I don't think the latter question was a particularly serious question. I think if he hadn't gone out of cell range, which I guess we're fortunate for, he would have. I think it was a rhetorical device to talk about this is just redistribution, and he's ignoring all of the structural, quote, redistribution that's already in corporate welfare, the fact that a lot of what big bad government does actually benefits the investor class much more than anybody else. And the redistribution, if you look at it from a more totalistic point of view, I think you would agree, is actually pulling money out of the poor and putting it into the rich, and that the government is actually helping in this in most ways. But I think that's just a suspicion, and as I say, that isn't what I wanted to respond to. I went to this, I don't know what website you were calling authoritative. I went to the Citizens for Tax Justice, which I guess gets hailed to be a union front or something, whereas when corporations fund think tanks, they're never called, well, not often in the regular press called flackies for corporations. But their analysis shows that something like, I think it was 37% people won't even see a tax cut. That these aggregates we're talking about are rather difficult to, you know, you were just talking about averages over certain percentiles. I think the plan has a 15%, for the 15% bracket includes only a lowering to 10 for the lower part, and that the upper part of that 15% bracket, if they get anything at all, it'll be related to tax credit for children and that sort of thing, so that they won't see. And there was another thing about upper middle class range, which I forget which bracket that is. There's a thing called an alternative minimum that would apparently still kick in, and that it would be sort of a fictitious reduction for them. And I don't know if you can handle those. I have to hang up and listen on the air. The rebate is proposed by the Progressive Caucus, hasn't gotten a lot of press, and I think the AFL-CIO has signed on to that. The Democrats, what I'm asking here is for you to characterize what the other proposals for tax cuts have been. You mentioned the rebates, but you could probably amplify on that. The Democrats have proposed, I think, taking the entire 15% bracket down to 12, which would make more of the working poor actually see this, see some kind of relief, if indeed my earlier characterization is correct. So thanks for the work, and if you might also do something proactively and anticipate any of the Heritage Foundation current arguments on this, since we'll have an hour with him as well. Thanks for your work.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Well, that's quite a number of topics there. I'll try and address as many as I can. The Democratic plan to reduce the first of all, the caller is right that the 15% tax bracket reduction only applies to the first $6,000 of income and $12,000 of income for a couple, $6,000 for an individual. So that's one of the reasons why families at the lower end or just, you know, even around the median would not get very much from this tax cut, because that reduction is limited, whereas the other reductions, like the one from the top tax bracket, for example, of 39% down to 33%, applies to all of the income of those people in that category. So so the most you would get, you know, if you are in this, you know, lower range, lower to middle range of taxpayer in the 15% bracket, which is the biggest category of taxpayers actually are in that bracket or below, you would get, you know, 15% of $6,000 for your, that's the biggest break you could get from the marginal rate reduction. So that's one of the reasons it's kind of small. Just to give you an idea of how people, the working poor, are, and not even the poorest of the working poor, if you take, for example, a single mother making $11 an hour, working full-time all year round, she would actually get nothing at all from this tax cut with two kids, let's say. She would get nothing from this tax cut, not even the child tax credit, because you already have to be paying the federal income tax to get the child credit. Now, this person is still paying federal taxes, probably over $1,200 a year in federal payroll taxes, even after she gets a refund for the earned income credit. So that's an example, and that's an you know, example how people, you know, who need the money the most are really not going to get anything at all. And this could be resolved by simply expanding the earned income credit. That is, the purpose of the earned income credit is to refund some of the money that people pay in the federal Social Security and Medicare taxes, which start at the very first dollar of earnings and go up to, you know, $72,000. So people at the bottom could get that. That would be a much more fair tax cut if you were going to rewrite the tax code, is to just refund more of those payroll taxes. Now, the Democrats have proposed as an alternative reducing the 15% bracket to 12%, and I think that would be fine, and that is a much bigger tax cut than the one that's on the table. As for anticipating some of the arguments that the next person will make, I tried to do that already by saying that they will focus on the income tax when they talk about how much the richest 1% pays and ignore the payroll taxes, and they'll try to make the argument probably that, again, since the income tax is paid primarily by at least households, you know, 90-something percent of it is paid by households in the top half of the income distribution, that this is who is going to get the tax reduction. But again, the flaw in that argument is, first of all, we're not just talking about income taxes. We have most families are paying more money in payroll taxes than they are in income tax, and so they could get a rebate, a refund of those payroll taxes. And second of all, they are also, by the way, still talking about, and the Republicans are still committed to, removing the estate tax, which is not an income tax. And it's a tax that applies to only about 2% of total taxpayers, and the richest 2%. And this is, you know, this is something that is, it makes up about a quarter of the total $1.6 trillion tax cut, and it's an enormous giveaway. David, you might have seen that the it was opposed even by, you know, a whole list of billionaires like George Soros and Warren Buffett and
Bill Gates' dad.
This. I always like that because, you know, I wrote a couple of columns on this tax cut, and they went in papers, you know, all over the country, the Miami Herald and other big city papers ran it, and I got a lot of mail as a result from people who, you know, don't like to pay taxes. And they all very often accuse me of being envious of the rich. And I had to ask them, you know, is Warren Buffett envious of the rich? I mean, you really don't have to. This is just a question of basic fairness. You don't, you know, and it also used to be a fairly conservative idea, too, that you should have an estate tax when it was enacted in 1916. The idea was, you know, the conservative idea that people should have to go out and earn their money as opposed to getting this enormous gift, inherited gift.
Well, I think some people, too, would make the argument that if you're really concerned about this issue, that sometime soon, and I forget when it is that this happens, that the figure of the estate that you can have and not pay taxes, I think, is going to go to $1 million. You could have $1 million.
That's right, and $2 million for a couple.
Right. So, as some people are saying, well, okay, let's make it $5 million. That and that would take care of again a lot of people that even now are, you know, the people that maybe were concerned about things like farmers, small business people. So you could, in a sense, provide relief to those people without getting rid of the estate tax completely. Now, I don't know if anybody is really talking about, well, let's go ahead, raise the bar several million dollars.
There are proposals in Congress now to raise it to $4 million. But, you know, it's interesting that even under the current exemption, which is only $675,000 per person and double that for a couple, in 1998, there were only 776 taxable estates in the whole country, less than 1.6% of the total, in which the majority of the estate consisted of family-owned business assets. And the number was even smaller for farms. So it really is a very, very tiny number of people who have most of their assets either in a small business or a farm, or I mean, not even a small business, but a family-owned business or a farm that are being affected by the estate tax even now.
We are a little past the midpoint. I have two callers we'll get right back to. And in fact, I'd, I think we had the man on the cell phone who's calling us back. So my apologies for not having written down his question. We'll see if we can get to it. Other folks are welcome to. And again, I should introduce our guest. We're talking with Mark Weisbrot. He's an economist and is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He does indeed write a weekly column on economic policy issues that appears in many newspapers across the country. And we're talking about the proposal of the president for this tax cut, $1.6 trillion. Over 10 years. And again, I do also want to mention that you will have the opportunity to hear another guest with a different point of view. Second hour, Dan Mitchell will talk with us by telephone. He is with the Heritage Foundation, Washington, D.C. Let's get back here to caller here on line number one. My apologies to you, sir, for not having noted down your question. So I think we probably didn't get to it. And if you want to come back to it or whatever, go ahead.
That's no problem. I was in a bad location. I'm parked on a hill now.
Okay. We got you loud and clear.
The first part of my original question was, is interest on the debt the third largest item in the budget?
Yes.
Entitlements first, defense second, interest third.
Yes.
I've heard that all through the years, but I thought it was still the case. And secondly, my question wasn't rhetorical. It wasn't about income redistribution. It was simply about what's to be done with this tax cut. And I think if it is less to the upper end and more to the lower end, it will be infused immediately into the economy. I don't think anybody can argue that point. People who live at or at one to two times the poverty line will spend that money.
Yes.
And they'll spend it when they get it.
No, and that's why I favor giving them definitely that kind of a refund. First, your first question, so we don't lose it again. Yes, it could still be the third. I would be very close. I'd have to look at the very latest budget that the president proposed. But it would be close. I mean, it's around $220 billion a year. That would be very close to Medicare and Medicaid spending as well. So it would be, you know, if it was more, I think it's probably now fourth or fifth. But it's, you know, it's right very close to third. I mean, the biggest...
The point I'm making is that if we focus on debt reduction early, and I'm not saying go all for debt reduction, but if we focus on debt reduction early, there's an automatic return in latter years when freshly elected representatives of the people can determine where that money goes.
Yes, but you have to understand, okay, this is worth a little bit of time because, as I said, the Democratic leadership...
I'm going to turn my phone off and drive.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Since the Democratic leadership is focusing so much of their argument on paying off the debt, that this is what we have to do, it is important to look at what are the real costs of the debt and the benefits of paying it down. And the caller is saying, which, you know, many people have tried to argue, that saving the interest payments on the debt will give us a lot of money in the future in order to, you know, take care of other things. And that's really, if you look at the actual number, well, let's take a look at that number. That $220 billion a year, if we project out, you know, 10 years when we get rid of that, that will be about 1% of our national income. So, you know, that's not really worth it. For, you know, to save that one penny out of every dollar and to say that we have to, for 10 years, forego doing anything about health care, education, or poverty, because that's what you're saying if you're going to commit the federal government to paying off the entire national debt. I just don't think that's worth it at all. It's you know, it's kind of like if you have a mortgage, anybody who has a mortgage could want to pay off their mortgage early. And there's some benefit to that. You would save on interest payments. But the question is, would you forego sending your children to the doctor or getting them a college education in order to pay your mortgage off early? And most families would say no. And that's exactly what you're doing, and quite literally, because you now have 10 million children without health insurance in the United States. You're saying it's more important, the best use of federal dollars is to buy up bonds, and I just don't think that makes any economic sense. And just to respond, I did the arithmetic for his second question. If you were to distribute that money he was talking about, the $27,000 per person in the upper 1%, to, say, the 10 million people at the bottom, it comes out to about $3,200 per person.
Okay. We have other callers. Let's go next to Bloomington. The caller's been patient here. Line 4, hello.
Yes, I'd like to start with a question. What proportion of this tax cut would the upper 5% income level be getting if you cut it off there? And at what income level would that begin?
Well, let me see if I can answer this. Again, I'm looking at some figures here that come from this organization, Citizens for Tax Justice. Well, they said the top 1% will get 45% of the tax cut, and then the next 4% will get 7.8%. So if you want the top 5, I guess that takes us to, 52.8? I got that right? A little over half?
That's about right. And 51, let's see, it's 43 and 7.8.
Yeah.
So that's 50.8. Yes, about that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so it appears to me clear that with the huge concentrations of wealth that have increased over the past decade and even longer in those income categories, it just seems unconscionable to me to send all that money back to that particular area. And I agree with the earlier points you made. I know many middle-income people that can't even afford health insurance. We aren't even talking about single-payer national health insurance. And it seems to me that a tax cut or a tax structure, one of the most worthy goals of it would be income redistribution. When you look at the huge degree of gaps between the rich and the poor people in our society. And I guess it comes down to the usual thing in politics for so long, and that is that the political contributions are producing the kind of a tax proposal we have here, and that's about what we should expect, given the fact that the average person has no input.
No, I agree with that very much. And it is interesting that you do have, in spite of the fact that you have almost no political leadership out there saying that we should use this money for health care and education, in the latest polls you see in some polls even a plurality of people saying, in fact, that they would prefer that to the tax cut.
Right. And how many of these middle-income people that supposedly think that they're going to get rich someday and benefit from this kind of a tax cut are really ever going to end up in the top 1% or even the top 5%? I think that's incredibly naive.
That's right. But it really is true. I think that if and this is why I think it's so unfortunate that the Democratic response to all this has been to just insist on paying down the debt, because I think if they did take the position that the caller is advocating, that this money should be used for something like health insurance, I think they would have enormous support.
Well, I think the thing that so many don't get is the fact that these party distinctions are insignificant, since it's big money that's basically affecting the behavior of the people in both parties. I agree with you that those arguments are extremely poor that the Democrats are making. And these proposals to simplify the tax code, for the most part, that's just a code word for realigning the tax structure to favor that top 1% and 5%.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the comments. I don't know if Mark wants to. You want to comment at all?
No, I think that is true. I mean, this is a very fundamental problem in American politics, is that because we have this kind of system of legalized bribery where campaign contributions determine what politicians' position on most issues is, you have this problem where, for example, the Democrats could, in fact, play to their own base and propose a kind of a populist program that would have enormous support and would benefit them even as a party. But because they're constrained, because they don't want to offend the large insurance companies, for example, who might lose in a national health care plan, they have to come up with these kind of debating tricks in order to try and defeat the tax cut. And so they've relied on this. First they started talking about how we have to save Social Security, which, of course, is not true at all. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Social Security. And then they started talking about paying down the debt until it finally became this whole web of kind of nonsensical answers to something where they could have just said, no, we don't want to give this money to the people who have gotten most of the gains from economic growth. Why don't we do something for the majority of Americans? And some of them are saying that. I mean, it's not their major argument, whereas it could be and it should be, I think.
But 10 minutes left, a little bit less. Our guest is Mark Weisbrot. He's an economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. We do have two people holding, and we'll try to get them both in the time remaining in this hour. Next caller in line is in Chicago on line two.
Yeah, hi.
Yes, hi.
I go along pretty much with your argument, and you've already mentioned a number of areas where the money could be better spent than to cut taxes for the wealthy, and that is in healthcare and education and so on. There are a number of other areas where we're going to face, the country that is going to face and is already in danger of facing huge problems, and that is in mass transportation and energy and the environment in general. And money is going to be required unless we let the country go to pot entirely. And what I wonder is whether you have a figure on the costs of these particular areas. What would they cost to make things right?
Yes, I don't have a figure on that. I mean, if you look at the proposed budget that just came out yesterday from the Bush administration for the Environmental Protection Agency, which, by the way, gets about 1/3 of 1% of the entire budget, they're actually proposing to cut that budget by 6.4%. So clearly this is not a priority at all right now, and I think it should be.
That's as far as you can go.
Yes, I don't...
No figures readily available.
No, I haven't seen anything quite like that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll go to Loda for another caller here. Line one. Hello.
Yes, I'm interested in the number of taxpayers that are actually included in the phrase, if you pay taxes, you should get a tax cut. Could you tell me how many taxpayers we're talking about?
Well, I don't know who they mean. I mean, everyone... pays taxes. Perhaps
maybe
they're
focusing on income. How
income
many people
tax.
Pay income tax?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The actual number that pays the federal income tax?
Yes.
I'd have to look at that, but I would say it's probably it's over. I would say it's at least over 60% that pays maybe. Over 3/4, probably even, yeah, somewhere around that, that pays federal income tax.
So what number would that? Could you give me a number?
Of total tax filers?
Yes.
I can give you a ballpark estimate. You know, maybe 90 million?
90 million?
Yeah, something like that. That's just a rough guess, though.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's go to, again, another caller here. This will be on our line number two. The caller is in Urbana. Hello.
Hello, is that, am I?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'd like to see if I understand correctly the connection that people are trying to make between the economy going down, let's assume that that's the case, and the tax cut. As I understand the logic in very simple terms, you cut the taxes, people have money, people go out, spend the money. The spending money creates a demand. Industries respond to the demand by hiring more people and producing more products, and the economy goes up. Is that basically the argument? And if so, could you tell me where the defect, if any, lies in the argument?
No, I think that's the basic argument. The defect in this particular tax cut is that it takes quite a long time before anybody actually gets the extra money in their hands, and you don't know really what the economy is doing at that time. But again, if you were to do something like a rebate and it was immediate, it would have, and especially if it went, you know, like the one I suggested, to, you know, per person. It was a per person rebate, so it really went to the majority of people and people who are cutting back on their spending right now because they're worried about the economy, I think it would have a significant impact and would be a good thing to do.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Maybe this answers, you can tell me what you think about this number, the question of the previous caller. And again, here I'm on the website of Citizens for Tax Justice. Here's a page where they're breaking down who gets the tax cut according to demographic categories, like people who are married and file jointly, people who aren't, people who have kids, people who aren't. Adding up all the numbers of all those people, the bottom line is a little over 187 million taxpayers. Does that sound like a reasonable
number?
That's what they say, the total number of taxpayers, if you add all these various categories. Does that sound like a...
Well, see, the problem with these stats is it makes it a little more difficult to sort it out, and that's why I had to just give a really rough guess, is most of them, and the CTJ's tax stats are usually, they're by filers. I think those might be tax returns, and some of those tax returns are families, and they're not separated out.
Oh, okay.
My estimate was probably too low then. It is probably probably higher than that. But you really have to look at it, and it is hard to sort it out, the exact number that he was looking for.
All right. Well, I guess we're just about at the point where we're going to have to stop. It certainly seems to be the case that the Bush administration and Republicans in Congress would like to see a tax cut happen, and that apparently some Democrats, I think, would be willing to go along with some kind of tax cut. Now we're getting to the point where we're going to argue about numbers. What do you think is going to happen? Will there be some cut? And it is just now a case of we're just talking about it. We're arguing price here.
Yes. Well, I think there will be probably some tax cut. But, you know, it is very hard to predict these things. That's why I try not to make these kinds of predictions, because it changes. The political situation changes very rapidly. I never thought I would see the kind of polling data we've seen in the last week or so. Or even the situation where they're not sure if they can get the this tax cut as currently proposed past the Senate, for example. So I think it's very fluid right now. It's very hard to say. If I had to guess, I would say some tax cut will pass. It will be bad in the sense that there will be rate reductions that will redistribute the burden of taxation from the wealthier taxpayers to the less well-off.
Mm-hmm. We're gonna have to leave it at that, with our thanks to our guest Mark Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. If you're interested in finding out more about his organization, they have a website. You can go there and also read some of his op-eds that have appeared in newspapers across the country. That, and they have other sorts of information. So,
yes, it's www.ceper.net. That's CEPR.net.
Okay. And in the next part of the show, we'll have some more talk on the same subject. Dan Mitchell will be joining us by telephone. He is an economist with Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., so I hope you can stick with us.